There definitely have been a lot of obstacles in that way. I just happen to be of the mindset that people don't build doors without keyholes. And therefore, to me, that was the most literal interpretation of what life is. It's a series of doors. But the same way you have never seen a door without a way to open it or a keyhole, it's the same thing with life.
This is the Angles of Latitude podcast, session number 137 with author, speaker, and race car driver, Christian Alessio.
This is squadron leader confirming hostiles inbound. Prepare for battle.
What you're about to hear is the integration of life.
Clarity is power.
If you live each day as if it was your last, someday you'll most certainly be right.
Liberty.
We choose to go to the moon.
It's happening.
And all things geek.
Yeah, I'm not sure I know how to answer that.
You got a badass over here.
Welcome to the Angles of Latitude podcast.
Hey, girls and guys, welcome back to the show. I'm your host, JC Preston. Joining me for this session is co-host Harrison Painter, founder of Amplify Indy. If this is the first time you're listening in, this is the show where we bring you life lessons or a message from successful entrepreneurs, experts, artists, and athletes to help you find and execute your own personal mission and live a lifestyle that you're proud of. Thanks for joining us today. Hope you're having a great start to your end of year activities, whether that's enjoying the holiday season, wrapping up 2018, and or just preparing for 2019. This is a really a great time to slow down just a bit and take a bit of a breather. And even if you're a type A person, you have my permission to regroup. Might as well set some new goals while everyone else is. And no, when it comes to setting goals and achieving them, today's guest is an amazing example. When I first met him here in Indy, I thought, oh, that's cool. There's a race car driver in our young Amplify community. But since then, though, he's not only become a leader of our community, but an outstanding member of the Indianapolis community as a whole as well. After hearing his story today, you're going to be able to see why he's been able to accomplish as much as he has over the years. In particular, we'll be discussing how he's overcome the hurdles in his life, the importance of building a relationship with organizations in your offline community, and how he made the time to write his first book. But before we get to that, I want to remind you guys of the Personal Mission Guide. It's a guide that reflects 6 months of research of different sources in self-improvement and the business world. And when it comes to living life, I mean, living a life of really personal fulfillment and meaning, there's really no instruction manuals on how to do that. You know, you get out of school and it's like, yeah, good luck. Okay. So, you know, you hear words like passion and purpose thrown around without much definition. And you also hear people like Gary Vee, you know, saying things like skills are cheap and passion is priceless. But then on the other hand, you'll hear people like Mike Rowe say that you shouldn't follow your passion. So which is it? In creating this guide, it was my goal to answer this question once and for all. And what I found is that the answer is, in fact, partly about finding your passion. Sure. But it's also just as much about learning how you fit in with those around you and how you can help them in an opportunistic way. You know, while I'm still doing ongoing research in this topic, I think that if you've been wondering, am I doing the right thing that's right for me, then I think this resource will definitely help you figure that out. If you're interested in checking it out, you can get it for you today by visiting newinceptions.com/personal mission guide. Again, that's newinceptions.com/personal mission guide. All right. So that said, just a reminder that by the end of this month, I'll be archiving old episodes of the show. You'll only be able to get them if you donate on Patreon. So make sure you get caught up on all the conversations before that happens. Also, if you're interested in what the future tiers look like, you can find out at patreon.com/newinceptions. Also, don't forget to subscribe and comment on the show on whatever platform you're listening to podcasts on. Really helps other people find the show so they can do work that matters to them as well. As usual, show notes and show note extras of this conversation can be found at newinceptions.com/137. and I'll be on after the show to fill you in on anything we might have missed. Hey everyone, welcome back to the show. JC Preston here, your host, and joining me once again is Harrison Painter, founder of Amplify Indie. How you doing, man?
The one and only. How's it going, man? Life is good.
Doing great. And a lot of cool things going on and got some future news, but we can't spill it yet, but we'll get to that point. But, you know, one of the things that we've really been doing, we just had the big event this past month. Today's guest was actually part of the panel that was part of that. And, you know, as far as that panel goes, I mean, there was people from all walks of life on it. You know, talking about the guy that we're interviewing today, he was actually our first live event.
That's how I met him. Yep.
You know, we've actually been talking him up a little bit recently because, you know, there's really a good reason for that. He has a heck of a story about how he's gotten to where he is today. And in fact, he's written a book about his life called My Life and Story, The Outside Groove. And in it, he touches on all kinds of topics ranging from being homeless to his time in the military to how he's now focused on becoming an Indy 500 driver. And today we're talking to no other than Christian Alessio. Thanks for joining us today, Christian. How you doing?
Thanks, bud. I'm well here in the racing capital of the world. It's always a good day in the racing capital of the world.
Right, right. So you're a race car driver, but you don't really fit the traditional mold, and that's an understatement. Talk to us about that a little bit.
Sure. No, I don't. The traditional race car driver, you would say, has always been a person of wealth. This is without a doubt the world's most expensive sport. This and horse racing. Traditionally, people have just come from wealthy backgrounds. They've always had the money, a dad who was able to cut a check and get them into go-karts from a young age, some as young as five, into quarter midgets, then on to midgets and legends cars and bandoleros and late models and just all the way up the ranks. There's always been somebody there to write the check. There's always been connections. Business wealthy connections to help write those checks to get these people to the top of the sport. And my story is different from that because I come from meager means. So I started out in Seattle, Washington, and just to a mom who she's an immigrant and was living off of meager wages, but still was able to work hard enough to provide a decent life for myself. And then at a point that all turned around, and we went from an okay situation to a desperate situation to a no situation at all, which is when I ended up homeless, which is atypical for any race car driver. But I think it's through that I've built the resiliency to keep going. You know, nothing's ever going to be as bad as that particular time in my life. And as long as I look at things through that scope, I'm always able to push forward and move forward. So, I'm as far as I know, I'm the only race car driver who's been homeless. And I'm the only one currently competing in the Mazda Road to Indy and IndyCar with a war veteran background as well. So
that's it. Cool. So can you kind of give me the specific point where a fire was lit in you to be a racer, or was it really kind of more of a gradual thing?
Okay, Juicy. Here's the thing: when you're a racer, we don't talk about fires. We don't bring those things up
because those are bad.
Fires are bad. Yeah, fires are bad. But no, I would say that it basically all started in high school. I was part of a little car club. My grandfather had left me a Volkswagen Beetle, and so I was able to join a little car club, and they did kind of autocross events, which are just these large airfields we'll go to, or an abandoned parking lot, just someplace with a huge expanse of pavement. And mm-hmm. You'll set up a little course configured with orange traffic cones, and people go through the cones, you know, and if you hit a cone, they add a second on to your time, and they break it up into classes so that your Volkswagen Beetle isn't going up against somebody's Porsche GT3. Because obviously you're going to get spanked. So slow cars go with the slow cars, fast cars go with the fast cars to kind of keep it even. And that's where it started. My passion for this just kind of grew, because as everything else in my life was falling apart around me, the car was the only time I felt like I was in some kind of control. And that's basically where it started. Yeah.
Cool. What kind of inspirations really have allowed you to believe that you could actually perform at this level? Because, you know, again, come with the background that you've had, you know, everything says, oh, you can't do this. But tell us about your inspirations of being like, oh, yeah, you can for sure.
I think it started with my math teacher, my senior year of high school. He didn't teach math. That's the crazy part. He's a math teacher, but definitely basically more of a philosopher. He'd tell you, you know, 15 minutes of math, and then the rest of the class would just be about life. For some reason, he just took a particular liking to me. I like to feel like he could sense that I was going through something that the other kids weren't at the mm-hmm. time. And he just kind of, he would talk to me after class and just really instill in me that, you know, I don't know what's going on and you may not want to talk about it, which I didn't, but whatever it is, you're going to get through it. You're going to be okay. And I think he was the first one to put the battery in my back because he was a man that I respected. And that just does worlds of anything for you, man. You know, it's the difference between, you know, if you're a basketball player and your grandmother says, oh, baby, you can play basketball. You know, you're really good. It's like, thanks, grandma, but you don't play. You don't know the game, right? I appreciate you saying it, but it doesn't mean much when you say it, as opposed to if Kobe said it. You know, if Kobe said you're a good basketball player, you take that on. So the fact that here was a man I respected, that I saw as a man that I respected, telling me that I could one day be a man that other people respect, and just to and just to beat these things, I believe that, and I ran with it.
Resiliency. I want to talk a little bit deeper about that. You used the word before. That's what your entire life, your career, has been about. We currently live in this culture that is very victim oriented. Yes, we have to check all these different boxes. Here's all the reasons why I can't succeed, or the world's against me, or life's unfair, or whatever excuse people want to put out there. But you seem to have found an inner power, the motivation, everything inside to say, I am not going to let anything stop me. There are no boxes to check. There is just, I want to do that, and I'm going to go do it. So talk a little bit about how you dig deep to make that happen, especially when there are so many obstacles that have been in your way.
There definitely have been a lot of obstacles in my way. I just happen to be of the mindset that people don't build doors without keyholes. And therefore, to me, that was the most literal interpretation of what life is. It's a series of doors. But the same way you have never seen a door without a way to open it or a keyhole, it's the same thing with life. So whenever an obstacle does present itself, I just know that there is a keyhole. I don't necessarily have the key today. I don't have the key right now. But just the fact that I know there is a way to open it keeps me searching, keeps me seeking, keeps me looking, keeps me pushing. And you flip over every rock, right? You look behind every tree, and eventually you find that key. And there is no door. They don't make doors that way. Every door has a way to open it.
Every door has a way to open it. Absolutely.
That's right. And that's been my mindset. And I think coupled with the things that I have gone through, you kind of build this reserve, right? Resiliency, I feel, comes in reserve, but it's built to the depth of your experience. If you haven't had many experiences or many trials or tribulations in a life, your reserve only goes but so deep. You've never had your back against the wall. You've never had to be in a situation where you had to climb out of this hole. Fortunately for me, I'm not going to say unfortunately, my reserve is built, has been built pretty deep, you know, from being homeless in high school, from losing my mom at an early age, from my tours in Iraq, from all these different things, from being a type 1 diabetic now. My reserve, my well has just been built pretty deep. When I relate whatever I'm going through now to some of those other things, it pales in comparison, really.
And I would think that work ethic and no excuses really helps sitting in the seat of a car going couple hundred miles an hour.
Oh, absolutely, man. Absolutely. It's that's the interesting thing about about sports in general, but just having that competitive nature. Resiliency is a big part of that. You know, Dale Earnhardt Sr. used to say, you know, it's not the guy with the best car that wins. It's the guy who refuses to lose. And bless Dale for saying that, because it's the truth. You know, I was watching a GP3 race not too long ago with Oscar Tunjo, and dude lost his mirror. Like, somebody clipped him, and his mirror came off the side of the car. And he kept going, and I was like, wow, you know, I'm not even mad at you. No mirrors, no way to see behind him. And he just kept pushing, kept digging, didn't bother to come into the pits to get that fixed. I said, now there's that resiliency I like. Last year, Battle at the Brickyard, one of our clients at Racecraft One, this kid, he lost a tire. Like, the whole wheel came off of his quarter midget. And he didn't come into the pits. Nope. His name is Aiden Brooks, and he just kept pushing on three wheels. And by God, he was actually passing cars. Like, you know, he fell to the back, obviously, when the wheel came off, but he started passing cars because he knew he had to finish sixth or better to move on to the next round. And he dug and dug and dug and got to sixth place before that race ended and was able to get on to the next round. And I said, stuff like that. That's
wow.
That's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about. You know, so yeah, it definitely does help in the car. The guy who refuses to lose.
Wow.
For sure.
So you're brand new to Indy as of this past, what was it, New Year's Eve-ish, if I remember right?
Oh, last New Year's Eve, yeah.
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 And since then, you've gotten yourself pretty well immersed. I mean, again, you've been featured with the Amplify series and of talks, yes, and all different kinds of people I know that you've connected with. I also know that you're a brand ambassador for the Gleaners Food Bank here in Indy. Tell us about the importance of actually building relationships like this when it comes to you as an athlete.
I think it's super important. You know, I got here and I didn't really have much of a plan when I got here. The plan was, I just knew I had to be as close to the sport as I possibly could if I was going to make this happen. Mm-hmm. And I got here and I really did not have a plan. I didn't know where I was going to be living. Didn't know anybody, really. Just pulled in and decided, okay, to make it work. I think what stuck out to me, though, was that it was New Year's Eve, right? So I'm like, well, what do Hoosiers do around here on New Year's Eve? So somebody said, go downtown, right? I go downtown, and I was living in New York previously to here. And, you know, in New York, they drop the ball on New Year's Eve. Here, I saw you guys drop an Indy car, and I was
drop
like
an Indy car. Yeah.
If that's not a beacon to tell me that I'm where I need to be, I don't know what is. And I got to stay in, and I got to making these connections. And fortunately, I was at an event that was in support of some homeless people. And that's just because when I was in New York, I was with this organization called the Coalition for the Homeless. And they go out every day for about 4 hours and just drive to certain parts of the city, giving food to the homeless out there. I would do it on Wednesday nights with my crazy bunch. But I knew that moving, I was going to miss that. I was going to miss doing my part to help out. So I said, you know what? I need to find out whatever Indy's needs are and start to help to meet those. And happened to meet the right people, ended up meeting Heather Connor from Gleaners, and we got to talk, and everything just kind of fit. They had never had a brand ambassador before, and it all just made sense because growing up, I didn't know about food banks. I didn't know that was a resource that I could have used when I was homeless, and I really, truly do wish I did, but I just want to do my part to make sure that others know about the resource and to actually get a hand in there. But it's important to me to do because those who are on the line, and Gleaners does such a fantastic job, especially with what they're giving out, because the statistics were showing that at other food banks, the rate of type 2 diabetes was just like through the roof, mm-hmm. Which says that, yes, we're giving people food, but we're giving them bad stuff. So they're trading in the problem of hunger for a health issue, basically. And so Gleaners does an awesome job of trying to bring that down. And it really just made sense. I'm a diabetic, you know, I was homeless. It just really, really, really made sense to connect with those guys. And I like to see myself as a beacon of hope for those people that are on the line, you know, to know that somebody was where they are now and to see that person still succeeding. And to be able to shake my hand and to talk to me and for me to hear their story, for me to share a little bit of mine. I really do hope that they leave here, not just with food, but with a head and a heart full of hope. Mm. and a new determination to climb out of this situation and stay out of that situation and to never go back and to make something of this life. Right. Circumstances just stupid. They're silly. They're given to you. But it's you, you know, who has to choose not to accept them. Mm. It's you who has to choose to look at the circumstances and call them stupid. Call them, tell the circumstance, you know, say it out loud. Circumstance, you are stupid and you don't know what you're talking about, right? I can do anything I want to do.
I think it's important, too, to point out that a lot of people don't go to food banks maybe because, A, they don't know about them, like your case. Or B, maybe there's pride there. And I think back to the victimhood, you know, mentality, don't look at it as a handout if you're in that situation. Look at it as a resource, right? Just like you need fuel in your race car, you got to have that food in your body. So, you know, I always say if you're in one of those positions currently, use your mindset to say this is temporary conditions. I'm going to utilize whatever resources that I can utilize, and I'm going to work my butt off to get out of that position. But don't let pride get in the way, because pride only keeps you where you're at.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You are absolutely right, Harrison. And also, by the way, I just want to say shout out to you for knowing to call it fuel and not gas. I appreciate you for that, man. People are like, how much gas goes in that thing? And I'm like, it's not gas, it's fuel, right?
That's my years on the flight deck in the Navy.
Love it. I love it, man. No, but you're absolutely right, though. Pride is a killer of progress. And it is a resource. Somebody is trying to help you get out of that. And that's really all you need is that first step, really. And then take off running and never come back.
In retrospect, you know, you've pushed through it, and you're like, you've seen the different levels of building these relationships, right? Mm-hmm. Let's just say that if you weren't a race car driver or an athlete, what would be some things that you would recommend to someone that's moving into a new city that they're, you know, maybe they run a business or maybe they just want to get involved in the community? What are some things that you think in retrospect now that could help them do that? As someone like into their area,
looking back on it, obviously do everything as early as you can. You know, really take that first week to put your face out there. Get to whatever the center of the town is and ask questions. Ask a lot of questions. What goes on here? Where are the movers and the shakers? Where do they hang? Where do they congregate? And then, you know, get into a circle, start finding your circle. And once you get into that circle, network, talk, you know, how can we help each other? What can I do for you? What can you do for me? And I find that the more we ask the other party, what can I do for you? The more willing they are to ask it right back. Right. And that's kind of how you end up working together. Yeah, and a lot of cities have some great resources. I found out here you've got Score. Mm. If you guys have heard of that group, the Score business people, they're amazing. You know, every week they have free consultations about business professionals helping you to build your brand if you've got questions, and it's a free resource. So things like that, all of that stuff is just a Google search away. When you do get to your new town, just find out where do I need to be? Where are the movers and the shakers? And then get with those guys and then elevate, you know. That's how it's worked for me. So
love it.
For first week I was here, first week I was here. Well, actually, my Uber driver ended up kidnapping me when I first got here. I remember, like I got in, I got in his car and I because remember I'm coming from New York, so I wasn't driving when I got here. You know, everything in New York is the subway. So there was no need for a car. And I got here and I'm like, all right, I'll Uber. And I had a meeting with a race team out in Brownsburg. And he takes me to the meeting and he asked me a bunch of questions on the drive over. You know, what are you doing here? Blah, blah, blah. And I explained to him, oh, I have a meeting with this race team because this is me getting my face out there. Hey, you know, I'm here. How do I connect? What do I need to do? Type of a thing. And he's like, oh, wow. Okay. Race car driver. I get out of the meeting. I come out. And he's still sitting there in the parking lot. This is like 2 hours later. And I'm like, what are you doing here? He goes, oh, I decided to take the rest of the day off because I've never read a race car driver before. I've never had a race car driver in my car. I was like, oh, okay, cool. So he goes, I know you're new. I'm going to take you back to my house to meet my family. And that's what he did. I got back in the car and he drove me back to his place and I met his family. And he starts calling over cousins and uncles, relatives, everybody come meet this race car driver. And he's like, and he just starts showing me around the city, right? He kidnaps me. And I'm just like, whoa. But one of the places he took me was down to Monument Circle. And I saw the Emmis Communications building. I see the big ESPN sign on the outside. And I said to myself, okay, this might be something valuable for me. It's good that I know it's here. And that's what I did. I came back that next day and I went in there and I was like, well, how do I get an interview on ESPN radio with you guys? And I got shut down. I got shut down because I was new. Nobody knew who I was. I mean, I was turned away. But what people don't realize is that when you turn me away, all you're doing is turning me on. Like that's a big turn on for me. Yeah. Tell me no. And I was just like, okay, cool. You know, obviously I found out Eli Lilly was here. I'm a diabetic. I decided to go over there, shut down. Didn't even get halfway through the parking garage before security told me, you don't have an appointment. You don't have this, get out of here. And I was just like, whoa, okay. Turning me on. So,
and they said New York City was rough, right?
Yeah, they said, right. They've got no idea about Indy. They've got no idea about Indy, man. But happy to say that since then, I have been on ESPN here. I have walked back into that Emmis Communications building and not been turned away. I have walked into Eli Lilly to speak for them and not been turned away. And
you actually spoke at a really large event for Eli Lilly.
I did, huge. Yeah, it was absolutely huge. Their partnership with the United Way, Lilly contributes about 40% of the United Way's money and budget. So we set a goal of $13 million for this event. And I got to get up there on the stage and speak to every Lilly headquarters throughout the country, plus Puerto Rico. And that was just really, really super cool, man, to tell my story. And they gave me like a little more than half the program, actually.
Wow.
And it was crazy. Yeah, it was crazy. So
not bad for a guy thrown out of the garage.
No, not bad at all, man. Not bad at all. And that was just super, super cool. So, but that's all it takes, really. When you get to that new town, poke your head in. You're going to get told no. You're going to get turned away. It's understandable. Nobody knows you. But they know your face now. That's that guy I turned away. That way, when you come back, you know, they recognize you and you can come back in. So that's all. When you get to a new place, just poke your head around.
I think that's an important lesson too, that people need to understand the word no is not necessarily a bad thing, right? Because if your whole life, you're only focused on asking questions when you're going to get a yes, you're not going to win. There's no winning in that scenario. So, you know, go out there, ask questions. If people tell you no, great. Just like you, use it as fuel. Keep asking over and over and over and over, because that's one thing, the resiliency, the tenacity, it doesn't exist as much today. And the people that do it and have it typically will succeed. They will win.
I'm going to agree with you on that, man. One of my favorite quotes is, the only reason the Indian rain dance works is because they never stop dancing.
They never stop dancing.
Right. You know, And that's definitely been a philosophy of mine for sure.
So you're a really busy guy, but here's another thing we have to touch on that we haven't touched on yet. You are also a published author. And this isn't one of those ghostwritten BS books. You were actually able to write this book. It's a detailed biography. Talk a little bit about that.
Sure. Right. I was approached by Cosmic Media Productions about telling my story, and they said, you know, what you do and where you've been is a good fit in our My Life and Story series. And they started telling me a little bit about the series and how the first book was this music producer, Mike Clemens, and just his story to doing what he's done. The second book in the series, though, was the one that really blew me away. It was Gail Devers, if anybody remembers her, 10-time world champion, track and field, 3-time Olympic gold medalist. She had the really long fingernails, also from Seattle. And she suffers from Graves' disease and what she's been able to do with that. That was the second book in the series. And I remember my mom was a huge fan of track and field. My mom used to run track, and Gail Devers was one of her favorites. So I thought it was nuts that somebody was even considering me for a book to be in a story in the same series in the same breath as a Gail Devers, because I don't have 10 world championships and I don't have 3 Olympic gold medals. So I'm just like, whoa, crazy, right? And I get this book, and basically they told me that, you know, just give us a page of notes, and we will turn that into the book. And as I gave the page of notes, I started finding myself, it wasn't fitting all on one page, you know? My story was too complex. And so I wrote another page and another page and another page. And before I knew it, I had 100 pages, and before I knew it, I had 200. And then I realized, wait a minute, you know, this is basically a whole book at this point. And I started to take pride in that, you know, it wasn't ghostwritten. This was me and in my words, because when people read it, I want them to hear me. When people who know me, you know, I want them to read it and go, yep, that sounds like Christian. That's something he would say. I could hear him actually saying that. And so I took a lot of pride in that and telling my story up until this point here. And I think it was awesome. What an awesome experience. In a way, it was cool just knowing that if I died tomorrow, my story is still here on this planet. You know, I've left the mark. There's something here to say that I was here. And I thought that was really, 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 really cool. So yeah, I did that. I'm working on a few other books now. It's just writing this one was so much fun, challenging, but a lot of fun. And so now working on more.
So how, a lot of people want to write a book. You know, I've met a lot of people, but very few people really ever do it. So how did you find the time to actually put that in? Was it just you basically were inspired, sat down and busted the entire thing out? Or did you kind of block time and do it, you know, a little bit over time?
No. This thing took a lot of time, but it was mainly because I wanted it to be as authentic as possible. And making it authentic meant that I had to sit in the emotional space that I was talking about. And that made it challenging. I don't like the word hard. That's a silly word. Everything's just a challenge. Nothing's hard. And it was challenging to sit in that emotional space for long periods of time, just because of what I had gone through was pretty difficult. And trying to be authentic with the book, I wanted to relive those experiences in my mind and in my heart. So it definitely took a lot of time. A lot of my writing was done on the road. At the time, I was driving in a midget car series. We traveled all the way through the Northeast, Pennsylvania, Jersey, upstate New York, Connecticut, just in that area. So whenever I was on the road to the next race or the next race or the next race, that's what I would do. I'd pull out my notepad and just start writing a little bit until the pain got a little bit too much. And then I'd sit it down and I wouldn't touch it for a week or two. Because like I said, living in that emotional space was challenging. But just little by little and just staying dedicated to it and keeping to go and just going through it again, just going through it again and going through it again. And eventually it was like, it's done. That's awesome, you know? And that's how I did it. It's just consistency.
Cool. Finding the time.
Yeah. Well, not finding. The thing about, I think you got to make the time.
Make the time.
If you're waiting on life to just give it to you, it's not. And that's why finding time, I don't consider that to be the best way. I think making the time is the best way to go.
You know, I right. so agree with that, because I cannot tell you how many times in my life I hear people either say that they're too busy, they don't have the time, again, excuses, right? But yet, if you can't find the time to do something, then that thing is not really a priority.
Absolutely.
Right? Because if you really want to do something, the time is there and you will find it.
Right. Exactly, man. And that's the thing, you know. I feel like in those moments when it looks challenging to find the time, it just means you need to sacrifice in another area. So maybe you get one less hour of sleep, you know, because you go to bed an hour later. Maybe you get up an hour earlier, right? There's 2 hours back right there. You know, for somebody saying that they don't have the time or they're too busy, there's 2 hours right there. If you go to bed an hour later and you get it up an hour earlier, and that's the 2 hours that you could spend dedicated to what it is that you're trying to do. I understand, you know, you got to go to work. I understand you got to go to your doctor's appointment. You got to do this. You got the kids. You got all of that. But maybe it means when you're at the doctor's appointment, instead of sitting there reading that magazine that they have on the table while you're waiting, you're researching ideas for your brand or whatever it is that you're trying to do. Maybe that means on that drive home, that hour long commute to work, instead of turning on the radio to listen to whatever Taylor Swift has going on next, whatever song she's just put out, maybe you put on a video that's and listen to the video of something that's helping you reach that goal. That's an hour back right there, you know, on the drive to work and on the way back from work. That's two extra hours in your day right there. And you combine that with the hour going to bed later and an hour getting up earlier. You now have just added 4 hours back to your day. Times that by five, you've now added 20 hours to your week. What could you do with that 20 hours, you know, to move towards the goal? And that's making the time. That's not finding it. That's I made the time. And just little changes like that, you know. I'm online at the grocery store. Man, this line is long. So instead of going on to Facebook and scrolling, you know, that's 10 minutes of my time right there, waiting on to get to the front of the line. I could be looking at a video about whatever it is I'm trying to do, or I could be learning about this or researching that, you know, or answering this email or sending out this email to get the information that I need to move forward. All these little things equal more time in the day. You guys have seen The Pursuit of Happiness, right? The scene where he's working at the place, but remember, he has to leave early. He has to leave 2 hours early every day because he has to go get his son. And so everybody else had that extra 2 hour advantage. And what did he do? He didn't say, oh, I'm at 2 hours of disadvantage. You know, that gets me off the hook if I fail at this. You know, I have a legitimate reason as to why I failed at this. No, he says, I don't care that I have to leave 2 hours early. I'm still going to get it done and I'm still going to win. And what did he start doing? He's like, you know what? I'm not going to drink coffee like everybody else is drinking around here, because then that means I have to get up and go to the bathroom, right? I'm saving, you know, half an hour just in all the bathroom breaks I take all day, right? There's a half an hour back. And he said he learned that, you know, if he didn't take the phone off his ear, put it on the receiver and then pick it back up again, he was saving himself, you know, half a minute right there by just hitting the receiver and dialing the next number. And I just thought, how cool, man. Here's a guy making the time, you know? Yes, I have to leave 2 hours earlier than everybody else. But at the same time, they're not using their time as effectively as I'm using mine. So we're kind of even, you know, It evens it back out. They're not using their time as efficiently as I am. And that's where it evens out. And I just thought that was so cool, man. And if we all did that, if we all found these little areas in life to use our time more effectively, more efficiently.
If I remember right, there's also another little tidbit about the book. That I thought was kind of funny and amusing. You actually worked with the co-writer Braxton Cosby, and he wrote an entirely different version than you did of the book. I know many writers will go through multiple versions before they finally get the thing out the door. But yeah, tell us a little bit about that if you don't mind.
No, I don't mind. And shout out to Braxton, good dude. But yeah, he like I said, when he wrote Gail's book, he wrote most of it for her. Basically, she just gave him like a half a page of notes, and he just kind of filled it in with what he could find online and all this stuff, right? And just kind of fleshed out her story. I didn't want that for mine. So yeah, he did. He did. I wrote my version. He wrote his version. And it was just like, no, because as I'm reading his, I'm looking at it as I would never say that. You know, like that right there, that doesn't even sound like me. And the people who know me know that that doesn't sound like me. And that's just what I wanted. So we kind of butted heads back and forth on that and came to a nice settlement of still being able for me to tell my story with a little bit of his influence. But it's definitely majorly me. And yeah, it was an experience, though. It was an experience, definitely, for sure. him and I kind of going back and forth about things. And that's the thing is that, and nothing against him, but he's never been in a race car, you know? So I think my way of explaining what that feels like to me, because it's my book, because it's my life, you know, made the most sense versus how he thinks it would feel.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Well,
so, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Personal preference. Yeah, for sure.
So we've talked a lot about the past. Let's talk about the future. What is in store for you in 2019? I saw that it looks like you signed a new sponsor here very recently. And what does 2019 look like right now for you?
2019 is definitely sure to be a promising year. My management team, Hector Scarano and Joe Beckham over at IHR Management Group, have just really been busting hump to get us a top notch ride, and we've had some pretty big sponsorship meetings coming up. Actually, we have another one tomorrow here with a huge company. And they seem to be going pretty positive. But 2019 it's going to be a diverse year, I feel. We've had some sponsors who were interested in moving us towards the NASCAR market. And then we've had some sponsors who were interested in keeping us here with the Mazda Road to Indy. Road to Indy. Mazda has pulled their name off of the sponsor for next year. With the Road to Indy and IndyCar. And so from the looks of it right now, we will have a lot of driving to do on many different, just in a lot of different genres, a lot of different types of racing, a lot of different schools of racing. So that'll be pretty, pretty cool, man. And Sebelt, which is the company you're talking about that just signed me, huge manufacturer of all the safety products. And I am proud to represent them and to wear their gear, whether it's in NASCAR, whether it's in the Road to Indy stuff, whether it's on a John Deere lawnmower, if that's what we're racing, I don't care. I am proud to wear Sebelt products while we do it. So
I love it. Yeah. One thing I do want to touch on real quick, we haven't touched on this either, is it costs a lot of money to practice to be an IndyCar driver, but technology has really made a difference in the cost of your training. Could you talk a little bit about how training works in 2018, 2019?
Sure. Absolutely. You are completely right. I remember we went down to Memphis International Raceway earlier in the year. We blew about $20,000 in 2 days. Just to practice, you know, just to test. And that's just in car maintenance, travel. Then of course the track has a fee, you know, it's pretty, pretty hefty. It's like a $10,000 a day thing, to rent that track out. Then you have to hire safety people. A lot of tracks will not let you test, if you do not have medical personnel on the track, just in case something happens, right? You have to have, people who are fire certified just in case you do happen to catch on fire. So all these things cost, you know, the fuel, the tires, everything just really, really costs money. And what puts a big dent in that, and what a lot of drivers are doing, is using simulation. There is a simulator program called iRacing, and they just do an absolutely bang up job of accurate 3D scans of everything. So it's the 3D scan car down to every nut and bolt. It's a 3D scan track down to every little crack in the pavement, every little crack in the asphalt. It's all there. So we use a lot of simulation here. There are two places that do simulation here in Indy. There's a place called IAM, run by Darren Manning, which is iAdvance Motorsports. And then there's the place that I go to, which I prefer, which is Racecraft One Motorsports Training up on 86th and Guyon Road with Mr. Kelly Jones, former F-16 pilot, really cool dude. And he teaches racing the way he would teach you how to fly an F-16, which is really cool, even though we don't like Air Force, right? But that's okay. That's okay. And we get in there, and basically he's got a triple display monitor. You've got one monitor above you that has all your data. Everything is pretty much custom built in there. The simulators move so that you're still simulating the undulations of driving over something and getting that feel. You know, you've got this thing called a butt kicker, so that you still get the vibration through the seat, right? A lot of drivers drive through the feel of the seat. And it's got motion to simulate yaw, which is the rear traction loss of a car. So as you're driving, you know, and you're making the turns and you see what the wheels are doing on the screen, that's great, but it's also kind of flat, right? In that regard, it's very 2D in that. But with adding the motion platforms, now I know, okay, and it's all about muscle memory, right? So if I'm learning a new track that I haven't been to in real life, and we jump in the simulator and we're doing this, and I notice where my hands are at a particular given time on this track, and I notice that I'm having the rear traction loss because, you know, the car is actually sliding out from behind me in the actual simulator. It's actually moving, right? And I look at my hands, I know that when I actually get to the track, do not have my hands here in this turn, right? I need to be turning a little bit less. Because if I turn here and I go too far, this is what happens. We're going to end up spinning out, you know? And so just through the beauty of technology, through what the people at iRacing do and how detailed and how accurate they are, combined with what Kelly does at Racecraft One, it's just such a beautiful meeting of what the brain can do. And it's really made it an accurate simulation experience, you know? And then you've got PitFit right down the hallway from Racecraft One, which is where all the drivers go to work out. Scott Dixon, James Hinchcliffe, Robert Wickens before breaking his back earlier in the year, Gabby Chavez, Spencer Piggott, all these guys work out at PitFit, you know? So that's right down the hall, which adds an even another layer to it, right? I can go to PitFit, run on the treadmill, to get my heart rate up to where it's going to be when I'm actually in the car, and then head right down the hall 20 feet to Racecraft One, jump in the simulator, and then really have a super immersed simulation experience. My heart rate's going to be where it's going to be when I'm actually in the car. I'm trying to make decisions with my heart rate elevated like that. And yeah, man, so dynamic job between Racecraft One and PitFit right down the hall.
Cool. Well, as we're wrapping things up, we're going to go into the rapid fire question segment. First question I have for you, since we've been talking about books, is what are your three top favorite books you gift or tell others about?
Oh, my top three favorite books. Good one, man. Good one. Well, My Life is a Story of the Outside Groove would have to be number one. I'm kidding. obviously that's mine, but no. Top three favorite books. I'm going to have to go with Wild at Heart by John Eldridge. Has been my favorite book in the history of life ever. That's definitely something that has meant so much to me. I'm going to go with Tools of Titans. And just because it's such a combination of hearing different thoughts from everybody, which is really, really cool as well. And then I'm going to have to go with, if I could throw another one in there, Relentless by Tim Grover. And just his secrets to mastering the mind, and what he's told to the sharks like Kobe and Dwayne Wade and these guys to get them into that mindset to become sharks, you know, dominate the game. So yeah, those would have to be.
What's something you've become good at saying no to?
Sugar. Sugar is something I have become.
Yeah, I'd hope.
At saying no to being a type 1 diabetic now. Yeah, that's something I've become good at saying no to. Beyond that, my doubts, my insecurities. You know, I'm a human being, so some days I wake up and I'm like, you know, can I really do this? And then it's like a shut up, Christian. You know, no, of course you can't. Get back in there, but definitely sugar. That's something I've become really good at saying no to.
What do you think is something that a lot of people don't realize is a huge waste of money?
Oh, you know what? I'm gonna say this because it's a recent thing that I just figured out. I recently had a meeting with a sponsor meeting with a company, And they started giving me samples. They're like, oh, you know, they sent me a huge gift basket of stuff. And then the young lady's like, hey, you know, why don't we go over to the sample room and you can pick out whatever you want, right? I go in there and I'm looking at the shelves and I'm noticing brands, right? Supermarket brand stuff from a bunch of different chains, Food Lion, Publix, you know, Kroger, all these different brands. And I'm like, well, why do you have all this in your sample room? And she goes, oh, because we make them. And I said, well, what do you mean? Now, this whole time, I thought that, you know, I thought there was a huge difference and a huge disparity between the different brands. I know now, go out and get you whatever supermarket you're in, buy that brand because it's exactly the same stuff as the thing you buy with the label.
Especially Costco and their Kirkland brand.
If I could go back and take back all the money that I've spent on thinking I was getting something else with a different brand, I could have gone on several beautiful vacations with that cash. Looking back on it, you know. And so, yeah, that's definitely the huge waste of, for sure.
What's one thing on your bucket list that might surprise somebody?
That might, you know what? I don't know if it's a surprise to people, just with the way I live my life, but there is a bungee jumping experience that I want to go on. I've been bungee jumping before, but this is bungee jumping into a volcano. In South America from a helicopter. That is something that is definitely on my bucket list. And you're dropped down low enough to where you can actually feel the heat of the volcano. I just think what a cool experience that would be. So that's my number one bucket list item, right?
Not a lot of room for error there.
Yeah.
That's just the way I like it though, isn't it? that's just the way I like it.
What's the secret to achieving personal freedom?
Oh, personal freedom. I think personal freedom comes from self-love, in my opinion. That is the key to personal freedom. Self-love. And that has nothing to do with how much money you make or how little you make. It's something that is intrinsic. We all have our insecurities, we all have our doubts, our but what becomes an umbrella over all of that is your self-love. And once you begin to really love yourself and to forgive yourself for past discretions and know that I'm trying my best to be the best I can be today, that's where that freedom starts to kick in my opinion.
Cool. Cool. Well, again, thank you, Christian, so much for spending some time with us today, man. It's been a true pleasure. Where can people find you on the socials if they want to get a hold of you?
On the interwebs. We've recently redone my Facebook fan page. Really cool promo video as the cover video done by Onyx Lens, Alexis Taylor and Onyx Lens. So you can find me at Christian, KristianAlexo official on Facebook. That's probably the best way to keep up with what I'm doing. The book, My Life and Story, The Outside Groove, can be found on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, Kodo, and other fine retailers.
Near you? No.
Yeah, right. That's where you can find all my stuff. Please definitely follow along with the journey from here till we get to the 500.
The road awesome. To Indy.
That's right.
Fantastic.
That's right.
Well, again, thank you so much, and it's been a pleasure. Appreciate it.
Thank you, man.
Thank you, sir.
So there you have it. Christian is he's a really cool guy that. You know, you can tell just loves having challenges. And, you know, the reason why is that he's realized that these obstacles he's had in his path have only made him better. And, you know, I think we can all learn a little something from him about that. So, you know, be sure to check out his book. I'll have that linked in the show notes where you can find at newinceptions.com/137. In the show note extras, I have a few videos relating to what we discussed today. And the first video from 6 years ago, he's doing a short interview for Fusion Magazine. It's a short 5-minute piece, but I think it's pretty cool to hear what he wanted to accomplish at that point in his career. And next up after that, we have his interview with Angel Jones of 12 Minute Combos. This was one of the 33 interviews that Angel did that day, and I think that this video does a good job you know, of portraying Christian in his day-to-day life. If that wasn't enough, third on the list is the interview that Harrison and Josh Bach did on the Amplify Indie podcast. And finally, I have a short video from Racecraft 1 of Christian doing his sim training. So that's it for session 137, guys. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for spending a little bit of time with Harrison, Christian, and me today. Really appreciate you guys listening in. Remember, if you want to do more meaningful work, you need to know what your passion is and how you can connect it to helping others. Download my new resource, Uncover Your Personal Mission, to help you do just that. Find it at newinceptions.com/personal-mission-guide. So until next session, dig in, have fun, and take care in what you're creating. And we'll see you back here next time.
Thanks for listening to the Angles of Latitude podcast. Connect with us at home, at work, or on the go at facebook.com/newinceptions, on Twitter at newinceptions, Instagram at new.inceptions, and on the web at newinceptions.com.